The Way of the Wise Art, being given by John Rawson in Australia. Level 2, The Christ Mysteries. Module 4, Uniting with Christ. The colour for today's session is a deep purple. Welcome back to The Way of the Wise Art. In Module 4, we shall build on some of the understandings from the previous modules to discover something of the way in which the Christ mysteries open us up to a new and different relationship with Christ. Today, we shall begin with the large central image. This is sometimes known as the squaring of the circle. It shows a robed man using a compass to draw a circle. Two other instruments are shown on the ground, a T-square for drawing straight lines and right angles, and a protractor for determining other angles. In the foreground, on the left-hand side of that picture, is what looks like a sketch pad containing other diagrams, including a six-pointed star inscribed within a circle. As we look at the whole of this picture, we could conclude that this is the end result of a long construction process. The first question we might ask is, who is this person engaged in an intricate mathematical operation? The answer, as you might suspect, is that this person is our self. The self has made a projection of the contents of self so that these contents become visible. The second question is naturally, what exactly are these contents? Let us begin from the outside and work our way within. The drawer has completed his diagram with a large circle. We first encountered the circle in Module 0. The circle, as we know, represents the divinity. This circle is rather like the one in Module 1, having a clearly defined center. So, in this case, it represents the I Am, sitting in the center of our being. The I Am is the beginnings of Christ consciousness. From this center, it will gradually be able to emanate throughout the whole circle. Inside the large circle is a triangle. Only two points of this triangle touch the circle. There is a gap between the apex of the triangle and the circle. The triangle, as we know, is the symbol of the soul. The fact that the triangle does not yet touch the circle at three points means that the soul, although it has the potential to become divine, is still some distance away. Within the triangle is a square. You may remember from level 1 that the number 4 and the square represent the astral body. There is a unique connection between the soul and the astral. One might say that the soul grows out of the astral and then enfolds it. Within the square is another circle containing a naked man and woman. These figures remind us of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. You may remember from Module 2 that when Christ came into incarnation, he was provided with an etheric body containing the pure kernel of humanity which had never descended into incarnation. Within the astral levels, then, are the etheric forces which contain a memory of our original spiritual purity. The term squaring the circle is a very old mathematical problem. To square the circle means that we need to construct a square of the same area as a given circle by using a compass and a straight edge, two of the instruments in our central picture. It wasn't until 1882 that this was proved to be impossible, although early mathematicians amongst the ancient Greeks had suspected it. This particular image comes from the alchemical tradition. Its creator tells us that it represents the making of the Philosopher's Stone. The Philosopher's Stone was reputed to have two wonderful properties. In the first place, it could turn base metals into gold. In the second place, it could heal all illness and bestow immortality upon its possessor. There is a truth to be found in this legend. The picture, in fact, does describe the process by which we ourselves can become the Philosopher's Stone. In other words, we become spiritual gold and live in the consciousness that we are indeed immortal spiritual beings. By completing the first level of the wise art, you have already begun this process. Today, we are going to look at the foundations of this process. Now, the first two lines of the verse tell us, when the circle becomes the square, then you know that the end is near. What end, you might well ask? It is the end of the old astral consciousness. The ancient writers thought of the astral and the etheric as soul vehicles. That is, their purpose was to provide the soul with a means of working through a physical body. With the old clairvoyance of those times, the ancients could actually see the soul descend from the higher spiritual worlds, being contained within the astral body. When we are in physical incarnation, the astral connects the soul with the etheric and hence to the physical body. This is shown in our picture because the square mediates between the triangle, which represents the soul, and the circle containing the Adam and Eve figures representing the etheric. Now this means that if the soul needs to communicate with the physical body, it first of all has to go through the astral, which then passes it on to the etheric, which in turn can affect this physical body. All this may take time before the message of the soul gets through and affects changes in the physical. Reverend Mario once gave the example of a person who made the decision to give up smoking. The soul, of course, makes the decision. It then informs the astral, which means the decision comes into consciousness. The person has the thought, I must give up smoking. Now the urge to smoke has an astral component. This is the thought patterns that come to the person and say, it would be nice to have a cigarette now. We might call this the psychological aspect of the habit. If the person perseveres in ignoring these thoughts, then after 28 days, a lunar cycle, they actually diminish to a point where they are no longer effective. At this stage, the astral has passed the message of the soul onto the etheric. The etheric body holds our memories, and so it will feed us certain memories about our habit. For example, we might make a cup of coffee and the etheric sends us the memory that a cigarette goes well with a cup of coffee. The etheric energies take much longer to disperse. In fact, it takes about 7 years before a person can really say, "The memories of smoking no longer affect me." If we think about this process, then it becomes imperative that the soul be able to impress itself upon the astral. The astral can be hard or soft. If it is too hard, then the soul can no longer communicate through it. If it is too soft, then the emotions and thoughts of the person are all over the place and susceptible to the smallest outside influence. When the astral first develops between about the age of 14 and 21, then it is very soft and unformed. This is one of the reasons why we are prey to huge emotional swings at this time. We are trying to develop a sense of identity, but the multitude of formative forces working upon us, parents, society, school, friends, hormones, and so on, are continuing to destabilize the astral body. During this period, the aura has little structure to it. Colors are temporary and fluid. They may change from month to month, if not from week to week. From the age of 21 to 30, the astral evolves a structure of its own. It is at this time that viewpoints and goals tend to be set that will last a long time. The colours in the aura now stabilise, and the inner colours at least become more permanent. The type of consciousness developed in these years will have an enormous effect upon the work of the soul. If the person has become firmly focused upon the physical world of parties, home, and status, then the astral becomes much harder. If there are other influences acting upon the person at this time, for example, a love relationship, then the astral may be less fixed. Active involvement in the arts is another energy which softens the astral and allows us to remain open to spirit. At this stage, we need to ask a very important question. What precisely do we mean by being on the spiritual path? This is the question posed by number 4. The path from human to divine is depicted by the central picture. This picture says that we all have the blueprint that will allow us to evolve from our human nature, the man and woman in the center, to the divine, the outer circle. The way, however, lies through the astral to the soul. The first step on the spiritual path, then, has to do with making changes in the astral body. We do this by making conscious decisions. Each decision we make in consciousness puts the soul in charge of the astral. There are two ways that changes may come about in the astral. The first is shown in the picture at the bottom left-hand corner of the image page. This image shows a square castle with four corners being attacked by enemies from outside. This represents the astral as it is attacked by negative energies from the outer world. It has become fortified and strengthened to resist the incursion of these forces. This is actually a depiction of how the astral will become more and more defensive as we grow older. Not only does it resist the negative forces, it now also forbids the entry of positive forces. I'm sure you have seen long-term relationships where people become so entrenched in their own lives that they forget to reach out to the other person. Nothing seems to change or grow in the relationship. However, in the middle of the castle, a huge energy descends from the spiritual worlds. Suddenly, consciousness lights up and the world changes. The energy which enters into the astral may be as dramatic as St. Paul's experience on the road to Damascus, or it may be something as simple as a kind word or a smile. The author, Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, was fighting in the Spanish Civil War when he was captured by the enemy. He was thrown into a jail cell and was sure he would be executed the next day. He says in his own words, "I was sure that I would be killed. I became terribly nervous and distraught. I fumbled in my pockets to see if there were any cigarettes which had escaped their search. I found one, and because of my shaking hands I could barely get it to my lips. But I had no matches. They had taken those. I looked through the bars at my jailer. He did not make eye contact with me. After all, one does not make eye contact with a corpse. I called out to him, 'Have you a light, por favor?' He looked at me, shrugged, and came over to light my cigarette. As he came close and lit the match, his eyes inadvertently locked with mine. At that moment, I smiled. I don't know why I did that. Perhaps it was nervousness. Perhaps it was because when you get very close one to another, it is very hard not to smile. I smiled. In that instant, it was as though a spark jumped across the gap between our two hearts, our two human souls. I know he didn't want to, but my smile leapt through the bars and generated a smile on his lips too. He lit my cigarette but stayed near, looking at me directly in the eyes and continuing to smile. I kept smiling at him, now aware of him as a person and not just a jailer. And his looking at me seemed to have a new dimension too. 'Do you have kids?' he asked. 'Yes, here, here.' I took out my wallet and nervously fumbled for the pictures of my family. He too took out the pictures of his children and began to talk about his plans and hopes for them. My eyes filled with tears. I said that I feared that I'd never see my family again, never have the chance to see them grow up. Tears came to his eyes too. Suddenly, without another word, he unlocked my cell and silently led me out of the jail, quietly, and by back routes out of the town. There, at the edge of the town, he released me. And without another word, he turned back toward the town. My life was saved by a smile." The smile in this instance was the energy that descended from the spiritual levels and dissolved away the barriers erected by the astral. In doing this, it also dissolved the barriers in the physical world. The penetration of the astral by spirit is the first step on our path. It is a circle, the inner circle in our diagram, spirit, becoming or entering into the square, the astral. I said earlier that there were two ways in which change can come about in the astral. We ourselves can, in consciousness, seek this change. This change comes about in the Christ mysteries through uniting ourselves with the Christ impulse. This is sometimes called building the temple. At the heart of this temple lies something very special. In the Old Testament, it is called the Ark of the Covenant. After Moses leads the Israelites out of Egypt and receives the Ten Commandments on the mountain, God gives instructions on building the tabernacle and the artifact at the core of the tabernacle, the Ark of the Covenant. The ark is to be made of acacia wood and overlaid with pure gold. Two golden cherubim are placed on top of the ark, facing one another so their wings are touching. After they constructed the ark, God is said to have descended in a cloud between the two cherubim. Now the Israelites represent that person who has broken away from the old consciousness represented by Egypt and is in search of their individuality. There are two clues for us here. First, we need the Ten Commandments. Now this is not a literal list, rather it is an inner undertaking. We undertake to change and take in charge our astral nature. This is done through inner discipline. One of the reasons the wise art process asks you to set aside regular periods for contemplation is to train the astral so that it becomes more responsive to the soul. As we work with the exercises, we are able to perform the projection shown in the central picture. That is, we are able to project our inner processes out into our consciousness. Gradually, the contents of our inner life become visible to us. This inner discipline creates the Ark of the Covenant within us. It is only then that God, the higher spiritual forces, are able to communicate with us. You may have wondered why the Way of the Wise Art commences with the Western mysteries and not directly with the mysteries of Christ. The reason is that in level one, we are building the Ark of the Covenant. Without the establishment of this within us, we would neither be able to understand nor cope with the energies of level two. The ark is represented in the abstract by the golden square in the top left-hand corner of the image page. This is the spiritual container which will be able to contain the increasingly powerful spiritual energies which will be entrusted to us. The image at the bottom right-hand corner of the page, is the fourth of the major arcana of the tarot, the Emperor. The Emperor represents the individual who undertakes to consciously bring inner order into the astral. In other words, to become the ruler of the astral. When I was much younger, I was invited to join the community set up by Reverend Mario. Like many of my contemporaries, I accepted eagerly, looking forward to the deep spiritual and esoteric disclosures that I was sure would be forthcoming. Although there were certainly lectures and meetings, one of the most important focus points of community life turned out to be the routines. We had rosters to help with the cooking, dishes to do, lawns to mow, house maintenance, and many other seemingly trivial tasks. Reverend Murray was even known to investigate our rooms to make sure the beds had been made. It took some years before I began to see the value of this training. The Greek word for the universe is cosmos. Cosmos originally meant order. The world is ordered, said Plato, because the spiritual worlds are ordered. Chaos, disorder, mess can simply not enter into the states of higher consciousness. Therefore, the initial step in any spiritual training is to create order within the life. This then creates order within the thinking, and hence order within the astral. Most of us have to be trained by life. Therefore, many people with a spiritual vocation find they are forced into work which demands a high standard of order. Nursing, teaching, the army, and many other professions will set high standards of ordered thinking, as will a focus on bringing up children. It is a simple equation. Ordered mind equals ordered life. If we find ourselves leading a life which appears to be chaotic and meaningless, then it is time to take our inner thoughts and emotional processes in hand. It does not matter how intelligent we are or how gifted artistically, without the ability to create order in our thinking, our intellect and talents will end up dissipating into fruitlessness. It is the command of self that the Emperor represents, which will enable us to open new doors, the Wizard's way in the poem, in life for ourselves and for others. And this brings us to two more lines of the verse. When the square becomes the round, then eternal truth is found. The process of the square becoming the round is the process of the transformation of the astral into the spiritual. The central image shows us that the path from the square to the outer circle lies through the triangle. In other words, the transformed astral becomes part of the soul. You may remember from our last module that the soul is tripartite, that is, it contains three parts. In our last module, we simply called them the three eyes of the soul. How did these three parts originate? Were they always there? It has been known that the soul contains the divine part of us, the I Am. About 500 years before Christ, in the Phaedo, Plato presents us with the metaphor of the chariot. The driver of the chariot is the I Am. It is placed within the chariot itself, the soul. The chariot is pulled by two horses, a white horse, the etheric, and a black horse, the astral. If the untamed astral is stronger than the driver, then our behaviour becomes wild and erratic. We are pulled off course. I remember relating the story to my grandson one day. I asked him, "Have you ever experienced the black horse winning?" "All the time," he answered immediately. "Me too," I said. We did a high five on the spot. 5 centuries after Plato, the same metaphor is repeated by one of the church fathers, Gregory of Nyssa. He says, "In the chariot, there are three drivers whom the history calls viziers. You will perceive these three, who are completely carried along by the chariot as the tripartite division of the soul, meaning the rational, the appetitive, and the spirited. Gregory is obviously reflecting the opinion of Plato, but he has included three drivers in the chariot. Now, Gregory has actually used Plato's names for the three aspects of the soul: the rational, the appetitive, and the spirited. We might ask why the change from one driver of the chariot to three. And the answer is simply about 1,000 years. Between Plato and Gregory, a period of nearly 900 years had passed. In this time, the soul had changed and evolved. Look now at the image in the top right-hand corner, the top right-hand corner of the image page. Here we have another representation of the four. But this time, instead of the square shape, the four is shown as a triangle with the fourth in the centre. If you imagine this to be a three-dimensional depiction, then you can imagine the fourth circle descending from above and making a connection with the other three. We need to pause for a moment and revisit some of what we have learned. We already know from the previous module that the soul has three modes of perception. We called them the eyes of the soul. We talk quite happily about the divinity in the soul, but in actual fact, what is actually in the soul is not at all divine. The essence of the divine that is associated with it does not quite come into physical incarnation. I'll just say that again. The essence of the divine that is associated with each of us does not quite come into physical incarnation. Sometimes this individual divinity, our I Am, manifests itself to spiritual vision as a light above the head. Within this light can be seen an image. Reverend Mario would call this the image of the over-self. The image is the current blueprint for what we are building in life for ourselves, and it changes as we grow and evolve. For example, at one stage in their lives, a person may have an image of a ladder within the light. This would mean that they need to climb a ladder in order to grow further. Or they might find themselves looking at a pyramid, which would mean that they are looking at the ancient wisdom and perhaps they need to seek out something new. The amazing thing is that the further we advance on the spiritual path, in other words, the closer we come to fulfilling our divine purpose, the closer this light of the over-self comes to us. In the very rare being who has become identified with their own divine nature, this light is actually inside the individual. It has united with the soul. This is the process depicted in the image in the top right-hand corner of the page. The divine self has descended towards the soul and is opening up stronger and stronger links with each aspect of the soul. If you have followed a thread which has been depicted in all the modules of level 2, you will understand that with the course of human evolution, we actually become more and more distant from our own divinity. Those who manage to tenaciously reconnect with the I Am from life to life were the initiates. In fact, the purpose of the old initiation was to release the soul from the astral and etheric chains which bound it to physical existence for a little while, so that it might enter the spiritual worlds and reconnect with the I Am. You can often tell people who underwent this process in previous incarnations. In the first place, they have a deep need to express individuality, whether this is through art, creativity, or perhaps sheer stubbornness. In the second instance, they don't feel quite at home in this world. They are square pegs in round holes, or strangers in a strange land. Then came the Christ event. In essence, what this means for us is that Christ gave us the gift of individuality a second time. This is depicted in dramatic fashion in the Book of Acts. Now, when the day of Pentecost came, they were all together in one place. Suddenly, a sound came out of heaven, like the sound of a mighty rushing wind, and it filled the whole house where they were sitting, and there appeared to them something like tongues of fire distributed and resting upon each of them. And they were all filled with the Holy Spirit, and began to speak in other tongues as the Spirit gave them to declare. What I have described as a light above the head, the writer of Acts calls a tongue of fire. Although modern translations declare this the descent of the Holy Spirit, which turns the passage into a theological statement, the writer simply calls it a Holy Spirit. The gift of Christ is the gift of our Holy Spirit. The gift of the Spirit allows humanity to shine the light of the I Am into the soul. We have talked several times now about the threefold nature of the soul. Just for a few minutes, let us contemplate how this comes about. The picture at the top right-hand corner of the page shows us the I Am working upon the soul. The soul, in its turn, has been working upon the other bodies. As it does this, it transforms each of them into an aspect of itself. In evolution, the soul first worked upon the astral body. This began in the distant period of time we sometimes call the Atlantean era. During some tens of thousands of years, the soul working on the astral was able to create an independent consciousness. We might call this first aspect sentient soul. Then, about 500 years before Christ, another evolutionary change came about. The soul was now able to work upon the etheric. You may have noticed that the understandings of the soul are traced back to the time of the Greek philosophers. It was in these people, and of course thinkers in other cultures, such as the Indian and Chinese cultures, that the second aspect of the soul developed. Over about 500 years, the ability to think in a formal, rigorous way evolved. We might call this aspect of the soul the intellectual soul, whereas under the influence of the sentient soul we would say, I feel. Now the developing intellectual soul allowed us to say, I think. Thinking and feeling together create beauty. The Greek civilization was wrapped around the ideal of the beautiful. Socrates indeed links the beautiful with the good, with the one. So to the Greeks, the beautiful was indeed the divine. We saw in the previous module that it needed Christ to come in and unite these two aspects of the soul, and in so doing, set in place the development of the third soul aspect. The sentient soul is the result of the soul working upon the astral levels. The intellectual soul comes about through the soul working upon the etheric. Now, in the 15th and 16th centuries, a remarkable impulse came into the world. Today, we know this as the Rosicrucian impulse, and its purpose was to facilitate the development of the consciousness soul, that is, the soul working upon the physical body. Whereas the sentient soul allows us to feel, and the intellectual soul empowers us to think, the consciousness soul will align us with the forces of spiritual evolution. We shall again increasingly recognize that we are spiritual beings on an earthly journey. In the Gospels, there is a remarkable story which indicates the fusion of Christ with our soul forces. As Luke tells the story, Jesus selects three of his disciples, Peter, John, and James, to accompany him up a mountain to pray. The three disciples represent the three aspects of the soul. So the story is describing how Christ had to raise these three soul aspects to a higher consciousness, the mountain. Luke says, as he was in a state of prayer, the appearance of his face changed and his garments became dazzling white. Now this is the stage at which Christ has entered into the higher spiritual worlds, and so more of his reality is revealed to the observers. In biblical stories, the outer garments may represent the aura. Reverend Murray once said that the aura of Christ was dazzling white, and so his disciples perceive it. Luke continues, and behold, two men were talking to him, Moses and Elijah, who appeared in glory, and spoke of his departure, which he was to fulfill at Jerusalem. Just for a moment, hold the scene in your mind. On the one side, we have Peter, John, and James, who represent the three aspects of the human soul. On the other side, perhaps slightly further up the mountain slope, we have Jesus, Moses, and Elijah, who appeared in glory. These are the three divine reflections of the principles within the soul. Look once more at the central picture. Look again at what appears to be a sketch pad in the foreground on the left-hand side of the picture behind the man with the compass. We've already noted that on the sketch pad is a six-pointed star within a circle. To see this in more detail, let's turn for a moment to the image page of Module 6. I'll just give you a couple of moments to do this. When you are on the Module 6 page, I'd like you to look at the central picture. Here you will find the two triangles in the central image. The pictures on the pad are the spiritual ideals into which we shall finally grow. And this one, the six-pointed star inside a circle, represents the evolution of the soul. The triangle that ascends represents our three soul aspects, Peter, John, and James, while the triangle that descends from the heavens symbolizes the divine counterparts of these three aspects. Within each of us is an awareness of completeness. I should say that again. Within each of us is an awareness of completeness, but also, paradoxically, an awareness of incompleteness. Somehow, on this level, we know that we are not whole in our consciousness. Sometimes we have glimpses of the greater consciousness, our completeness, only to be brought back to confront the limitations of this earthly experience, our incompleteness. The mysteries of Christ promise us that there is a road to uniting with our spiritual self. That road lies through the experience of Christ. To this point in the Wise Art, we have been working towards a greater connection with Christ. Christ asked his disciples to do two things for him: watch and pray. In the first phase of the Wise Art, we developed the ability to watch. This means that we learn to disengage from the astral stream of consciousness and observe our own inner process. This can be done in formal meditation, but eventually it has to become a continual and essential part of life. Now that we have built the inner container, the Ark of the Covenant, through watching, we can build the temple by proceeding to the second direction of Christ, to pray. As we walk this way, we have a staff that supports us. Every wise art needs a staff, for it is through the staff that the wise art works magic by communicating with the higher spiritual forces. The name of this staff is prayer. You will have noticed in Luke's story that Jesus took his disciples with him so that he could pray. Prayer is not a simple act of requesting or bargaining. It is an act of entering into a communion with the divine. Reverend Mario used to say that meditation is listening to God, prayer is talking to God. It is through prayer that we shall establish a deeper link with the spiritual worlds. For as our soul turns upwards to the divine, so the divine counterpart of the soul descends towards us. This divine counterpart is a gift of Christ. As our soul reaches out in questions and pain to the Godhead, so the power of Christ reaches out to embrace us in knowledge and in love. As the music returns, imagine that you are embraced within the deep purple cloud, which is the colour of the holy mysteries. Now, hidden deep within this cloud, allow yourself to become open to Christ. Allow your heart to talk freely. Talk about your hurts, your disappointments, your pain, but also your joy and your love. Know that as you talk, you are being listened to by the whole vibrant cosmos. Then sit quietly and listen, for the divine will answer you. Christ will answer you in the same way you have talked to him. Within the deep peace and understanding of the heart, I look forward to being with you next time in Module 5. So shall it be.